This is The Huddle. This is what we do. Every Thursday from noon to 2, presented by Bickford Ford. Let's go! The Huddle.
Welcome into The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross, getting you guys ready for a Monday night game against the Philadelphia Eagles. Seattle Seahawks, Dave and Jake, coming off a nice little win against the Arizona Cardinals, helping them in the NFC West. And not only that, helping kind of improve your confidence about this defense. Dave, that was by far the best performance I've seen from this defense. What did you see specifically where you felt like they either corrected something or took a nice little step forward?
Funny you should ask. I just did a little football 101 thing downstairs talking about attacking the perimeter and attacking blockers and those kinds of little things. I think that's what makes it sustainable. And last week when Jake, I'm sure he still is on fire, but last week when Jake was particularly on fire, he pointed out that, you know, the San Francisco game, and I think that's what people would hold out there is, okay, well, they did it against San Francisco, and then they went back and had Buffalo, you know, and it was the Rams after that, I guess. But in the second half of the Rams, they started to repair. They only gave up 115 yards, I think, in that second half and just 6 points.
Yep.
And the reason why is because I felt like they attacked blockers much better. They played the outside better. And so there's just these little things that are happening now. And, you know, we heard the whole thing about the meeting with the accountability, which at first I was like, oh, what took so long? But, you know,
that's how I felt.
Yeah, but I mean, but there's lots of guys coming together and, you know, sometimes you coach a certain way and then you figure out how do these guys learn? You know, what's the best way to do it? And so I'm hoping this is something that if it's that much of a revelation, I think that they can do it again. That's what makes me think that. The other thing is, you know, you're starting to get the cavalry coming back, you know, as far as health, Shaquille coming back, and guys just stringing starts together. Like Jamal Adams had, what, 2 3/4 games? Then he missed like 6 weeks,
yeah.
And now he's back. This is like his 3rd or 4th week. So those kinds of things. But look, you know, I think it's fair if you're a Seahawk fan to go, okay, well, I need to see it again from the defense, right?
Yeah, that's how I feel. I feel like I was encouraged by what I saw in that it was a fun game to watch. And for the first time all season, it felt like your defense was part of the reason you won. And it wasn't a balanced game against a weak opponent the way they were against the 49ers. It was a balanced game against a strong opponent, against currently a wild card playoff team. But I need to see more. I agree with you. And that's not to slight this team. It's just to say you've had 9+ weeks of struggling play, and then you've had a game against the Arizona Cardinals, and I'll throw in the second half against the Rams, where you played pretty well, and I need to see more of it. I will say one thing encouraging about it, looking at some of these stats, this is for both you and Jake. Jake, I'll let you go first here. I think it was most encouraging to see some of the guys that were involved. DJ Reed, I was worried about what the secondary would look like. He finishes the game with 11 tackles, had a pass defense, really nice game for him. That pass defense, by the way, one of those, he and Quandre Diggs were involved in some targets in the end zone, which was really nice to see. KJ Wright blowing up screens left and right, containing Kyler Murray. A fantastic game by him. Who impressed you most on defense, Jake?
It's really hard because there are a couple really standout performances.
You just do it, mister.
In my mind. Okay, Dave, geez. If you're saying so, I mean, Stacey, we can go back and forth. I can't mess with you, Dave. For me, the guy who stands out head and shoulders on defense was Carlos Dunlap. Yeah. I just think his performance was outstanding. But more importantly, I think that his energy and his just how much fun he is having, you could just see it kind of, you know, permeating throughout the team and the defensive line and the way everybody was hustling around. I just think Dunlap is providing a spark that maybe we didn't have any idea that he would be able to bring to this team.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, to me, it's been DJ Reed. Him and Ugo Amadi, I think, are the two guys that have kind of been the solid spark. And think about this. I mean, I don't think anybody was really – Marquise Blair beat out Ugo Amadi for the nickel spot, but he was making plays out there during camp. And so – but I was just so fixated on Marquise Blair because he plays so much better, and then he gets hurt. But Ugo's starting to come along. I always mention this too. I like the little guys. The little guys in the NFL that
the
can
guys
do
that
it.
Play bigger than they are.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy if you are built and, you know, you look like DK Metcalf, right? But if you're, you know, 5'8" and a half like he is, I think his explosiveness, I'm just very impressed by the way he is attacking tackles and blockers. And then DJ Reed, I mean, that guy's going to bust one for a touchdown at some point.
That guy's got wheels.
Doesn't he? I mean, his explosion, and I don't know what his 40 time is, and I don't really care because this guy's got field speed. You know, some of these guys that can run a 4.3, they don't play at 4.3 level. This guy plays faster than he runs, so it's, I'm sure, what his time is. But he's been a really good surprise. But
yeah,
more than anything, it's just all of them coming together, right, Jake? I mean, that's more of a value than having a bunch of superstars out there.
It is. It's a huge value. And Pete Carroll talked about the need for communication and how the communication stepped up this last week. And talking about that communication, Dave, I'm curious. You talk about DJ Reed. Shaquille Griffin, it sounds like he is going to be coming back. All signs are pointed to nothing but good there. What do they do at that other position? Do they – I'm having a really hard time with this. Do they start – Trey Flowers? Do they start DJ Reed? I mean, you know, Trey came off a pretty good game against DeAndre Hopkins. I'm trying to figure out if that was more of the game plan than the performance. I don't want to take anything away from Flowers because I thought he did well the other night, last Thursday night. But DJ Reed seems to be that spark for this team. What would you do, Dave?
That's a great question because, you know, you want to get him on the field right now. I mean, again, first or second in tackles the last 4 weeks. You mentioned, what, 11 tackles last week, Stacey?
Yep.
And then, you know, okay, so maybe you slide him down to nickel corner if you're going to bring back Shaquille. And are you going to, what about Trey? Trey's playing well. He is right now. I mean, Pete said, I know he blew that first coverage against Buffalo, at least I think he did. Looked like it, all signs led to yes. And then Pete said he had one of his best technical games in that Buffalo game. He played well the other night. He had a bad missed tackle on DeAndre Hopkins. If he doesn't miss that tackle, it's probably DeAndre Hopkins has, what, 20, 30 yards instead of 50? So, I mean, and they put him out there. So now all of a sudden it's crowded, but that's exactly what you want. You know, you want to sit there and go, man, who do we start here? Because we got a couple of choices. For a while there, it was like, well, we might have to, you know, throw somebody out there like they did with DJ Reed in the beginning, you know, and he performed. But still, it's kind of a risk, you know, if you don't have enough talent. So, yeah, I mean, I think right now DJ Reed, though, he deserves to be on the field no matter what.
The Huddle is presented by Bickford Ford, Dave Wyman, Jake Heap, Stacey Ross here with you, recapping that win against the Arizona Cardinals before we look ahead to the Eagles. One name we haven't talked about yet, which made the biggest play of the day, it felt like, at the very end of regulation with 38 seconds left. He had a sack of Kyler Murray. It's Carlos Dunlap. He finished the day with 4 combined tackles, 2 sacks, 3 quarterback hits. They managed to get pressure on Kyler Murray in a way that they hadn't before. Dave, it's easy to just on its face look at that trade and say, yeah, that clearly worked out. But just how important has he become for this defense?
Well, 3 sacks in 3 games, and he's the all-time leading sack artist in Cincinnati history. It's hard to believe. I mean, think about that. Yeah. And I think it was 82 and a half is what he had. And I was looking at the active players there. It doesn't look like anybody's going to catch him anytime soon. So I just think he's one of those guys that's really talented that you just kind of never paid attention to because he was in Cincinnati. So look, I've seen him make one mistake where he tried to go underneath a block, but he went underneath a block in Buffalo and made a tackle for a 6-yard loss. So, and then, you know, I don't know what they were thinking because it was a 3-man rush and maybe they got confused, but for some reason Dunbar was singled. So, and he just beat the guy around the corner. But I've seen him do that. I've seen him put, you know, like a rip move. I've seen him bull rush. I've seen him do, he can do everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, he's really important right now. But, you know, look, you can't get those sacks if there's not coverage downfield. And once that is, it looks like it's starting to work better. You know, they did a really good job of coordinating their pass rush with their pass coverage.
All right. We got 3 Seahawks in danger of missing Monday night and 3 Seahawks coming back. We'll ask John Boyle about it next.
This is The Huddle, presented by Bickford Ford. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back into the huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Joining us right now, John Boyle of Seahawks.com. John, how are you?
I am doing well. How about you guys?
Good. Getting ready for not just Thanksgiving weekend, but also a Monday night football game between the Hawks and Eagles. I'm not going to put you on the spot about a conversation Jake and I were having about green bean casserole and stuffing being incredibly polarizing dishes. That's for a later conversation.
Oh, boy. Food takes already, huh?
Yeah. Oh, it's never too early, John. Before we do, I want to take a look at some of the Seahawks that are coming back for Monday night. We've got Chris Carson, Ethan Posick, and Shaquille Griffin, correct?
That is what we heard from Pete Carroll. You know, there's going to be a bunch of question marks going in the week, but yeah, all three of those guys made it back for that bonus practice yesterday, so obviously encouraging to get back players of that caliber.
Hey, John, we were talking about DJ Reed and what you do with him. We had him on our show last week. He's just a fantastic kid. What a story. I mean, he gets to play in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They cut him, and he's been either one or first or second in tackles the last 4 weeks, but now you're getting healthy in the defensive backfield. Seems like they got to get him on the field.
I would think they're going to find ways to. I mean, as you said, just a great story. When the Seahawks made that claim on him, you kind of figure it's a stash him away for 2021 kind of thing because he's injured, and now he's been your nickel and a starting outside corner already for you, and oh hey, he's returning kickoffs and looks pretty good back there too. So for starters, you know, Pete Carroll said he's going to keep returning kicks, so that's one way they'll use him. But I gotta think, you know, whether it's letting him compete with Ugo Amadi for the nickel spot, or you know, I don't know what happens with the outside jobs, but you'd think that those are probably settled with Trey Flowers and Shaquille Griffin when Griffin is back. But yeah, I don't know how you keep DJ Reed off the field the way he's been playing.
John, what has Carlos Dunlap's impact been like on that team? Just, you know, not just on the field, but, you know, kind of as a teammate. It seems like he has been, you know, more than what they were even anticipating in terms of, you know, grabbing him from the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just personality-wise, we see it in the press conferences, and then you know, you hear it from Pete Carroll and his teammates. He's a fun guy to be around. He's loving this kind of change of scenery and a chance late in his career to play for a Super Bowl contending team. And then on the field, it's, you know, obviously 3.5 sacks is great, but it's what he's doing for that whole defense. I mean, it's not a coincidence that the team sack numbers are up, that Jaron Reed looks as good as he has all season, that, you know, LJ Collier is making plays. It's when you have that elite edge pass rusher, it kind of frees things up for everybody else. And he's, you know, it's early still, but he has been a great acquisition so far.
John, the Seahawks have a chance to really get things rolling here with this four-game stretch against some struggling teams. When you look specifically at the Eagles and how they match up that offense against the Seahawks defense, what kind of opportunities are there for the defense?
I mean, for starters, I would love to see the defense get back to getting some takeaways. I mean, for a long stretch early in the year, they're getting a lot of turnovers, and you know, they've shown some improvement in a lot of other areas, but that's cooled off a little bit. And, you know, look, Carson Wentz is still dangerous. I know he's been struggling, but he can make some big throws. He can run. He can hurt you. But he's also turned the ball over a lot. So, you know, to me, there's opportunity there. And I just think overall, this stretch of games, you know, you can't take any NFL team lightly. But if ever there's a chance for this defense to kind of build off an encouraging game and a half that they're coming off of against the Rams and the Cardinals, I think this stretch could give that defense a chance to really galvanize itself and get good for the home stretch.
John, what do we make of Trey Flowers? I hear from Pete, and look, he held DeAndre Hopkins to 50 yards. We talked about the one missed tackle he had, but you know by my eye, he's playing pretty well. But I feel like he's one of those guys. And look, corner, I mean, it's glaring when you make a mistake. Whereas, you know, if you're a linebacker, it's not as obvious. But Pete said he's been speaking very highly of him and said in the Buffalo game he had one of his best technically games as far as his technique. How do we rate Trey Flowers this year?
I think he's improved a lot over the last few games. I mean, look, there were some struggles early in the year, and it wasn't just him, obviously. The whole defense in the secondary was having a tough time. And, you know, fans were getting down on him. And then when they needed him to step up with Dunbar hurt and then also with Griffin getting hurt, where you need to lean on Trey Flowers, he's played some of his best football these last few weeks. And to your point, at that position's tough, where you can play a pretty solid game for 3.5 quarters, and if you make a couple mistakes, that's all anybody's going to remember. But to your point, other than the missed tackle on that one open field chance he had, he played really well last week. Pete Carroll has been really high on him because he has shown a lot of growth, and it's a really good sign that you have a young, you know, still learning cornerback showing that improvement, and he could be a guy that really helps you down the stretch here, especially with Dunbar dealing with that injury.
John, is this the year that we see Tyler Lockett added as a Pro Bowler for a receiver? He's been to the Pro Bowl before, but it was as a special teamer. Could this be the first year that we see Tyler Lockett into the Pro Bowl as a receiver?
I hope so, but it's hard when you have a teammate doing what DK Metcalf is doing, because, look, it's rare for any team to put two receivers on one Pro Bowl roster, and right now DK Metcalf is rightly getting a lot of the attention with the big numbers he's putting up, the touchdowns. Tyler Lockett's been phenomenal. He's got a good chance to set some franchise records this year for receptions, and he and DK Metcalf will both threaten the franchise record for receiving yards. So he is definitely deserving of a Pro Bowl nod, for sure. I kind of wonder if only one of the two of them gets it, if Metcalf will kind of steal it from
him. Regular listeners to The Huddle have also noticed, John, that you've been gone on paternity leave. So you guys have welcomed a new family member. We want to say congratulations on that, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
If I sound unintelligent, blame the lack of sleep.
Tired. No, we're really, really happy for you guys. That's awesome. Congratulations. We do miss you.
Much.
We're glad to finally have you back. I want to just take a look at some of the guys that they might be missing here. You've got Quentin Dunbar on IR. It sounds like Bo Scarborough is going to have surgery. Travis Homer maybe getting his wrist look at. Is there a guy, Brandon Shell, also include him, dealing with an injury that has a good chance to return maybe after Monday?
Just going off what Pete Carroll said, I mean, we know the guys that they're expecting back. If Shell can't play, we don't know. The high ankle sprain can always take a while, but if he can't play, you would hope he's back soon, because he's been one of their best quiet offseason acquisitions. He looks so good. So he'd be the one I'd be most concerned about come back. And then, in terms of coming back to practice, they wouldn't play in a game next week, but you're also keeping an eye on Daryl Taylor and Rashad Penny, obviously two guys you hope can start practicing soon. And if they can, then maybe guys who can add a little something to your team in December.
Hey, John, I can't believe we haven't brought this guy up yet. How about Damian Lewis? He starts off the game. My question is, when did they tell him officially that he was going to be the starting center? And then, his performance after a couple of rough plays in the very beginning, including giving up a sack, and the holding penalty was totally bogus, and then there was a fumbled snap. But then, from everything you hear from Pete, is that he just had an amazing game at center, which he hasn't played before.
Yeah, I'm not sure when exactly they told him they were going with that, but with a short week, you got to think of something. They made that decision early in the week, and Pete Carroll said they had tried it a tiny bit the week before, so it was at least an idea they were considering, knowing that Kyle Fuller had that ankle injury and Posick was dealing with the concussion. But yeah, he wasn't perfect by any means. You outlined some of the mistakes that happened, but for a rookie who, it's not like he was a center in college and moved to guard in the NFL. This is a guy who really never played center. For a rookie to do that and for the offense to function pretty well in a big game like that, that's just another thing that shows how impressive of a rookie he's been. I just keep going back to, when they drafted him, Pete Carroll talked about that relationship he had with Ed Orgeron over at LSU and, how much that Coach O raved about him, and we're seeing it for so many reasons. He's just been a phenomenal draft pick to get him in the third round for everything he's done.
He is Seahawks reporter John Boyle. Seahawks fans, if you're not following him on Twitter already, I don't know what you're doing. Go give him a follow at John P. Boyle and read his stuff at Seahawks.com. He'll join us every week for The Huddle. Thanks, John.
Thanks. And, people do that now. It's mostly going to be baby pictures, but it'll
get
back to football here later in the week.
You know what? We're
Congrats,
fine with
man.
Both. Thanks. Yep. Have a good
Congrats,
Thanksgiving.
Congrats, John. It's awesome.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, guys, we're going to take a step across enemy lines, taking a look at the Philadelphia Eagles with NBC Sports reporter Ruben Frank. That's next.
Free hair grafts, advancedhair.com.
This is The Huddle, presented by Bickford Ford, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, welcome back into the huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Eves, and Stacey Ross. Joining us now, guys, we're stepping across enemy lines for an opponent preview with NBC Sports Philadelphia's Ruben Frank. Ruben, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I mean, my first question is the one you've been getting all year, and there's no easy way to answer it, so I guess I'll try to narrow it down with what have you seen as maybe one of the one or two biggest issues with Carson Wentz this year, because he has just not been the same player we're used to seeing over here on the West Coast.
Yeah, not remotely the same player. Kind of an unprecedented decline that we've seen from him for a guy who played at such a high level first 4 years of his career. I think there's physically he's fine. His arm is fine. His footwork, his mechanics, that's all fine. Really, the one issue is his decision making, his pocket awareness, his locking onto one receiver and not looking guys off, not going through his progressions, holding onto the ball too long, throwing to the wrong guy, throwing it to triple coverage. It's been really strange to see all the things that he was really good at for 4 years, been really bad at. And it's funny. I'm just looking up, like trying to find a precedent for a quarterback with his experience who's had a decline like this, and you just can't find one. So it's pretty shocking, and 6 games left to try to figure it out.
Ruben, two-part question, real quick one first. Are they still piping in booze at the stadium there in Philly? And I mean B-O-O-S, not Z. And then, I mean, he's been hit 40 times. I mean, how much of that is getting to him? It's more than anybody in the NFL.
He's been sacked 40 times. I would guess probably at least half of them are on him. The O-line hasn't been great, but, he's holding onto the ball so long. He's just standing there. He's a sitting duck. He just doesn't have any decisiveness. So I don't think he's gotten great protection, but certainly when you look at the number, 40 sacks, I think he's on pace to be the fourth most sacked quarterback in history behind David Carr twice and Randall Cunningham in his rookie year when the Eagles gave up 110 sacks, an NFL record that will never be approached. Has it had a cumulative effect? Maybe. And you know, he had a concussion that ended last year.
Right.
There's a lot of speculation about that. Sometimes these things linger and have long-term effects. Even if a guy gets cleared through the protocol, he had a tore his ACL in 17, had a back injury in 18 that ended the season. So been a lot of injuries, a lot of cumulative things on his body. I think with anything, it's not one thing. I think it's probably the O-line, the receivers haven't been great. The running game has been up and down. The play calling has been pretty shaky from Doug Peterson. He's usually pretty good at it. And he's just missing guys. So it's really been a lot of things, and that makes it a much tougher thing to fix.
Ruben, for all the dysfunction that's kind of gone on the offensive side of the ball, the defense has played relatively well. I mean, they haven't been outstanding, don't get me wrong, but they've played well. I mean, they play tough. And from what I see on film, you know, they're a tough out. What has that disconnect been like between the offense and defense side of the ball?
Yeah, they've been okay. They haven't faced a lot of good quarterbacks, so they faced a lot of backups. I mean, two of their three wins are against backups. The other one's against Daniel Jones, who ended up beating him a couple weeks later. So, yeah, they're 10th in the league in defense. They're 6th in pass defense. I think they're getting the most out of what they have. They don't have a lot of really good players on defense. Malcolm Jenkins is gone. Fletcher Cox really isn't the same player he used to be. So they haven't given up a lot of long drives. A lot of the touchdowns against them have been short fields because of all the turnovers that the offense has had. You don't get name calling, you don't get finger pointing around here. That's one good thing about Doug Peterson. They stay together as a team. So there hasn't been any of that. I think the defense, I'm not sure you'll be asking how well the defense has played at around midnight Eastern on Monday night or Tuesday morning, because that's a challenge. That's something they haven't really faced. It when they faced real quarterbacks like Roethlisberger and Lamar Jackson, they haven't been a great defense. So we'll see how they do against Russell.
One of the big questions that's going to be lingering over this team, and I'm sure you've discussed it at length, is whether or not they're going to switch to Jalen Hurts, do a quarterback switch. Peterson's been hesitant, and you kind of he's made a lot of mistakes, but you feel for the weird spot he's in. Do you expect them to make that switch at all this season? I know they're tied to Carson money-wise.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think Doug he's a guy that's very loyal to his players. He doesn't bench guys. They don't cut guys. He doesn't do that kind of thing. I'm not sure how ready Jalen Hurts is without OTAs and spring camps. And, you know, he doesn't get reps with the ones because Carson needs all the reps he can get right now. He's thrown two passes this year, didn't have a preseason games. I thought he looked pretty good in training camp. He throws the ball better than I expected. But as far as really understanding the defenses and what they're trying to do, I just don't think he's ready. So my guess is no. I think the one thing you might see is if there's a game where they're down 33-6 early in the third quarter, halftime or something, I could see him going to Hurts just to say we needed to get Carson out of there, keep him healthy, game was out of hand, let's see what the kid can do. But as far as – and then go back to Carson the next week. But as far as benching him, you know, I think Doug knows that this team's future depends on Carson Wentz. And I think that their approach is we have to do everything we can to get him right. And not playing him isn't going to help. I think there's value in letting a quarterback, no matter how experienced or accomplished he is, step back for a week and get a different view and catch his breath and get away from it and, you know, just kind of see the game from a different perspective and then go back the next week. But it just doesn't look like Doug's on the verge of doing that.
Hey, Ruben, it looks like Miles Sanders having a really good game, and I saw Doug Peterson was praising him a little bit. Other than him, he's got, 700 yards a total offense. Who are some of the sort of unsung heroes or the people or player that the fans in Philadelphia actually like?
Yeah, that's really funny that you asked that because we were trying to come up with a list of 10 players, my colleague Dave and I, of 10 players that the fans don't hate right now. we got stuck like right around 7. We started adding the long snapper and the punter.
Yeah.
Alex Singleton is a young linebacker who played in the CFL for a few years, who's been really good. He was on the practice squad, and he's been starting because of injuries. He's probably been their best defensive player. Brandon Graham is having probably the best year of his career in year number 11. Jason Kelce, he's going to start his 100th straight game at center on Monday night. Those are some of the guys. Miles, Boston Scott, who's the backup running back, who's really good. He's like 5'6", and he's a really good little back. Had a 56-yard touchdown a couple weeks ago against the Giants. Those are some of the guys. But I'll tell you what, it's a short list. Travis Fulgham is a young receiver they got from on the waiver wire from the Packers, who was drafted by the Lions last year and never played. He's had some really big games. He had 150 yards in one game against the Niners in his second career game here. So he's been pretty good. But other than that, it's slim pickings. They don't have a lot of guys having good years.
Yeah.
Ruben, where is this organization right now? Because it's really hard to pick where they're at. Are they going to continue to keep rolling out the same group? I mean, they're committed to a bunch of older veteran players for a little while. Or do you think that this is kind of the last season where they're going to try and maybe shake things up and kind of start from scratch again? Where do you think the Eagles currently sit as a franchise?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think every Super Bowl team kind of grapples with that. Like, when do you move on from the nucleus that won you a Super Bowl? And I think that's where they are now. A lot of those guys from that 2017 Super Bowl team just aren't very good anymore. And they're older, obviously. You could be in your prime at 28, and 3 years later, you're washed up at 31. And I think, like we said earlier, Doug's just kind of really overly loyal to those guys. And you look at Jason Peters and Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson and Roddy McLeod and, you know, that whole, you know, Fletcher Cox, that whole group, Zach Ertz, they're all in their early 30s. They're all not playing at the level that we're used to seeing. And they all, for the most part, have big contracts. And the organization's really loyal to them. And I think they're at the point where they're going to have to make a decision after the season that, we've got to move on from that whole group. And the problem with that is they haven't drafted well enough to replace those guys. So they're going to be really bad until they can get enough good young players in here to replace them. And, you know, it's the same thing the Phillies went through after they won the World Series. They had this whole nucleus with Jimmy Rollins and Ryan Howard and Chase Utley, and they just kind of – the fans liked those guys, and they come out to the games to see them, but they just weren't that good anymore. And at some point, you just got to move on, get young, and, you know, draft well, bring in – you know, players who might be learning, might not be as good as the veterans, but at least have an upside. And I think that's the point they're going to find themselves at when the season mercifully ends in a couple months.
He is Ruben Frank of NBC Sports Philadelphia. Amazing insight. We loved this interview. Thanks so much, Ruben.
Anytime.
Thanks, Ruben.
Mercifully ends.
Coming up with a list of players that fans don't hate.
I liked it. But honesty, it was awesome. All right, who fills in for Brandon Schell if he can't play Monday night? We'll ask Ray Roberts next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle, presented by Bickford Ford. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross joining us right now. We're going in the trenches with former offensive lineman, current host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, Ray Roberts. Ray, how are you?
I'm feeling pretty good. What was that music? Is that always my intro music?
No, but it should
like
be
it?
Always my intro music at all times.
Oh, I love it, man. That's like that deep head bobbing music
exactly.
Right there, man.
Yeah, it's Redbone from Childish Gambino. It's it's a good song for quite a good analyst, I have to say.
That's great, Turk. Can you give us a review on the band now and maybe the song itself?
Coming up at 3.
Okay.
Turk, analyzing our intros. Hey, Ray, I'm going to get started right away. I do want to ask about Brandon Schell. Before I do that, though, we've got to talk about Damian Lewis's first ever start at center. Did he exceed your expectations? Because I know you were high on
him. Yeah, he did. Well, considering that, you know, the dude has never played center before. I played a little bit of center in high school and, you know, had a big linebacker like Dave lined up over me one time and he blitzed. And before I could snap the ball, he tackled me and the quarterback. And I was like, okay, that's the last time I'm doing that. But Damian, to me, played really well. He got off to a slow start. But the thing I like about this dude is his comments, you know, about just whatever the coach wants me to do, that's what I'll do. And to me, that is just a football player. And the more football players you can have, I think the better that you'll be. The one thing that I would, like, throw caution to, though, is that Pete Carroll got too excited about him having the ability to be a good center. And it's like, okay, well, let's just pick one spot for him, Pete, and leave him there. Like, mm-hmm. We don't need a dude that can bounce back and forth and all over the place. Either let him be an all-pro center or let him be an all-pro guard. But don't let him try to play both. And sometimes I get the fear that the Seahawks like that versatility, and then they have dudes moving all over the place. And I said before, I like linemen that have PhDs in their position and not just college degrees.
I like that. How about, you know, we're going to hear about Brandon Schell. We're not sure, you know, that was pretty nasty injury he had. But his play so far, I don't know if you've talked to him, Ray. He's a great dude. Really, I feel like the guys that can really express themselves and everything, they can talk about how they do their job and everything and that it helps them on the field. But, yeah, what about his performance? And have you talked to him? Have you got a chance to catch
him? I haven't had a chance to talk to him. I wish I could because yeah. I've been really impressed with his play. You haven't heard his name called a lot, which is a good thing. So because he's not getting a bunch of penalties and blown assignments and this, that, and the other thing. And I think the combination of him and Lewis, just watching how they started the season where they're having some issues on some of their double teams and switching off games and things like that. And as the season has gone on, they've gotten more and more efficient at it. And like I said before, the thing about Schell that he brings, that he may not have like this, the raw power that like a Fetty had, but he has way more consistency and just, you know what you're going to get. He's not going to get the pre-snap penalties. He's not going to get the holding calls. He's going to show up and be the same dude. And so I think if he has a chance to just keep gelling in that position, that they have a dude that can be there for a long time. You know, I love his athleticism. I love the length that he has. I love the way that, you know, you can see with him and Damian Lewis, they want to be the the two that the team runs behind. So they're trying to finish blocks. They're trying to finish guys. They're, you know, blocking down the field, getting to the second level, all those different kinds of things. And so I really like that about him. That has impressed me. Just from the film that I watched of him coming before he came to Seattle, I wasn't real sure exactly what they were going to get other than a guy that had some experience. But he's kind of shown up and gotten better since he's been here.
Ray, I've been wanting to ask you since the game last Thursday, is this the game that you were talking about in terms of being able to marry the run and the pass together? You know, that's a comment that you have made with us earlier, and I was curious if this game fit that in your mind, that they were more in sync together in terms of the run and the pass, the connectivity of it, the naked game, the play action game, all of it. Was this the game that you were kind of envisioning?
Absolutely. I mean, like the marrying of it, I think the word you just used, the connectedness of it, that is even a better way than the Marion part of it, because everything did feel connected. It felt like one thing was setting up the other thing. It didn't feel like a bunch of different pieces that were trying to function as one. It just, the game plan, the execution of the game plan, the rhythm of the game plan, the connectedness of the game plan felt like one cohesive effort. And then, to me, I feel like when you have that, then in those games where you want Russell to be aggressive, you know, early in the game when you want him to pass for 400 yards, like, then you have a platform to launch from. Before, there was no platform to launch from. It was just like, we're just going to pick these plays, you know, as they come, and hopefully something works out of it. And with the magic of Russell, he can make things work. And now this feels like a system that they have. It doesn't matter what the defense brings. If we need to pass for 400 yards, Russell can pass for 400 yards. If you need to rush for 120, we can get 120 yards rushing. If you need to do both, you can do both. And so this idea around balance, and you know this, Jake, is not a 50-50 thing. It's just more of a, what you just said, it's more of a connectedness thing. Like, how is all of this stuff connected together? And it absolutely felt like that this past week.
Huddle is presented by Bickford Ford. You're here with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We're talking to former offensive lineman Ray Roberts. He's also host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Ray, it sounds like Brandon Shell could be a long shot to make it Monday night. You've talked before about how impressed you've been with his season. Who are we looking at to fill in for him if he can't go?
Well, I can't say the kid's name. I mess it up every time I try to say it.
Aboye.
I do too.
That dude.
Yeah, that dude. We'll call him that dude.
Cedric.
But I would just rather someone else say it than for me to fumble all over.
That's what I do every time.
But I think he's had the reps to get in there and do it. I think he has the athleticism. You know, when he got into the game the other day, he had a couple, you know, iffy plays, but I think a lot of that was just from sitting around and not actually playing out there with real bullets, so to speak. And so I think if he's had the reps, you know, this is an extended kind of a bye week that they've had, that he's been able to get some reps and get in there and play. I think that would be, the best person to put in there. He has the athleticism, he has the length, he has some playing experience. So it's not going to be like the game is new to him. He just needs to get the reps to get in there and play. And then hopefully, you know, with this extended layoff, that Shell's injury isn't going to be, you know, prolonged past this, because he and Lewis definitely had, they definitely have something going on.
Big Ray, what do you like about you see from Carlos Hyde? I feel like if we can just have one or the other, and then we'll see about Rashad Penny, but Carlos Hyde, Chris Carson, it sure makes a difference. I mean, I think the offensive line has been blowing open some big holes, but Hyde has been a real surprise to me. I guess I thought he was just an insurance policy, but he's really a good back.
You know, he is a really good back, and I was excited when they got him because the dude has been productive everywhere he's been when he's given an opportunity. You know, he's rushed for over 1,000 yards before, and you know, he's been like the guy before. But for whatever reason, people seem to keep finding or thinking they have someone better, so he moves off to another place. And so I'm excited that we got him. And the one thing that I like about him is that his patience running the ball. So there used to be, like, when you're offensive lineman and you have plays where you pull and you're leading the running back up in the hole, they used to always say be quick to the hole but fast through the hole. And so quick and fast, they sound similar, but they're different. And so to me, Carlos runs that way. He's quick to the hole, but he's fast through it. So he has enough patience to let things develop, to let the blockers get to the second level or get that backside sealed off, and then he's fast through the hole. And so he's a put your foot in the ground, you know, one cut type of running back, and that works with this offensive line because that's how Chris Carson runs. You know, he kind of makes one cut and he's going downhill. And then the other part of it too, Dave, is that to me, just getting the offensive line the reps of running the ball and getting into a rhythm running the ball. I said this on the broadcast the other day, and you know, maybe I'm, you know, exaggerating a little bit, but if the offensive line is in a rhythm, you can put a running back there who's not a superstar type of a dude. He doesn't have to and be a Chris Carson to get the 5 yards that they've created for you.
Yeah,
you know, you see that all around the league. There's running backs that you've never heard of that can get you 5 yards. Now the difference is when you have a Chris Carson or a Carlos Hyde, then they can break that arm tackle, they can make that guy miss, and then that 5 yards becomes 10 yards, or you know, 10 yards becomes 15, 15 becomes 20, like that kind of thing. So to me, it's just it was a combination of getting Carlos back or Chris Carson back, one of those two or both, and allowing the offensive line the time to kind of get themselves in the rhythm, run blocking during the game.
He is Ray Roberts. You can hear him on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show and every week on The Huddle. Thanks, Ray, and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, can I just make one more comment,
yeah.
If you don't mind?
Yeah.
I heard earlier where Jake asked someone, what has Carlos Dunlap's impact been on the team? And it's really easy to look at, well, the pass rush and the sacks and the pressures. But the one thing that I saw last week, and it showed up mostly in a press conference, is his pure enjoyment and excitement of playing football. And I think that with this defense, with so many people having so much success and all of a sudden not having success, they had lost that part. And now they see that in Carlos Dunlap, and it impacts them that way. Not just what he brings physically on the field, but they see a dude that goes like, man, like I've never been in this situation before, and I have this renewed energy. I have, like, this is new life to me. This is, you know, and so now you see a guy like Bobby going like, man, like I wish that the Toils were here now so he could experience that. So that's a reminder of this is what it was like when we're balling out, and I think that has an impact on the defense as well.
That's a really, really good point, Ray. All right, we appreciate you joining us. Seriously, thanks so much. Good to hear from you, too.
All right, you guys have a great Thanksgiving, and try not to eat all the food. Save some leftovers.
There you go.
I'm eating all of it. All right, Trey Flowers joins us next.